Hey there, and welcome to the Maria Gonsalves podcast for mediumship, intuition, and tarot. I am your host, Maria Gonsalves, an evidential psychic medium, mentor, and author. And I created this podcast to get rid of the fear of developing your spiritual gifts. So if that sounds like your sort of conversation, then hit that subscribe button and listen in. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Maria Gonsalves podcast. I'm your host, Maria Gonsalves, and today we have a special guest all the way from Singapore. Danny is with us today. So welcome, Danny.
Thank you so much, Maria. It's a pleasure to meet you on screen, and I love your podcast. I love your guests. I know a few of them, so I'm really grateful for the opportunity to talk to you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So I'm just going to let our listeners learn a little bit more about you. So Danny Van Develt, what your last name, where does it come from? I'm just curious.
So that is my family name. It's not my married name. Van Develt is a Belgian name. And my father's family were originally Belgian, immigrated to South Africa, and then dad immigrated with his family when he was about 18 to Australia. So it sounds very glamorous, but it means of the fields. So like my ancestors were potato farmers or something, basically. But I like of the fields. That's what it means. But it's Belgian originally.
Oh, okay. Because my name is Gonsalves. So a lot of people think I'm Spanish.
Yes.
But it's actually Portuguese.
Yep.
Because it ends with an S. So if I was Spanish, it would end with a Z.
Gonzalez. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
I'm always curious where people's names come from and how they got the names. So I'm just going to continue. So Danny helps others understand and master the art of meditation, transformative inner practice, and healing through private coaching, energy sessions, courses, and tailored programs for individuals, schools, and organizations. She is a popular speaker at networking forums and workshops, and a published writer, podcaster, and music producer, and holds regular retreats in Asia and Australia. Danny is also a Reiki master in the Usui Reiki tradition and qualified meditation teacher through the Awareness Institute in Australia. She is a member of the Meditation Association of Australia and the International Meditation Teachers Association, recognizing the standards of her teaching and program developing. I love meditation. She draws from techniques and wisdom of numerous world traditions, current research, and her own experience. Her focus is on enabling others to understand and work with the design and function of their mind-body energy system to engage in transformative inner practice for maximum performance, self-healing, and intuitive living. And she is the author of Spirited. I love this book. So I was telling you just before we got on, this book reminds me so much of Eat, Pray, and Love. It's like the vibration of it is so relaxing. And I feel like when you write the book, this was my experience reading the book, it feels like there's poetry weaved in it, and all your senses begin to tingle as well. They did for me. And I was like, oh my goodness.
Nice.
Oh, it was so powerful. I think just like 5 stars, and it should be a movie. Your life should be a movie.
I love it. Thank you so much. I've heard that before. You know, I love getting feedback from readers, and writing books is sort of a weird thing because it's largely a solitary experience for quite a long time. And then boof, it's out into the world, and it's exposing in a way, you know, because people are really reading about you and your philosophy on life. And but I do get that from people, that they feel quite vibratory when they read it, which is lovely. That's telling me that the ideas in it are active. And so I'm so pleased you love it. Thank you for reading it before our chat. That's great.
Oh, I love it. How long did it take you to write the book?
Oh, it's a good question. Look, I think it had been forming in my mind for some time. And I write other things too. I write courses and I write blogs and I write a column in an online magazine here in Southeast Asia. So there were bits and pieces that were already written. But I think when the lockdowns hit here, and it was very strict in Singapore, like we didn't have the 5K thing for a while. We were at home. And I was going a bit nuts and I thought, now's the time. I've got to finish it. So I think it was forming and percolating for a long time, but I wrote it and actually pulled it together into a sort of submission-worthy version relatively quickly, like COVID, really.
Yeah. No, it's
Lockdown
great.
COVID.
Like once you start reading it, you're in it. I can't put the book down because it's so, I don't know, like the places come alive as you talk about it and as you talk about your journey. So with the book, you talk about a spirited life. What does that mean for our listeners?
So, the way that I explain it in the book is that, first of all, our spiritual aspect is just as relevant and just as essential to our well-being and the way we roll through life as our body, our mind, our feelings, our energy system. And what I like to follow the model, the yogic model of the koshas, and that all of these aspects are all layers of consciousness, and it's all actually refractions of one thing. So it's one self-organizing system. And in the mainstream, we have much better understanding of the mind-body connection. So those amazing sort of modern day pioneers like Dr. Joe Dispenza, Dr. Bruce Lipton, I can reel them all off, but they've brought the mind body energy thing into, they've brought a language around it so it can be understood better by in the mainstream. But and as I say in the foreword to the book, there's still this missing bit, this bit about spirit, and it's difficult to measure. It communicates into our awareness in non-linear language, so a mnemonic language is what Freud would call it, but through synchronicity and sensation and symbol. And it's largely been the preserve of organized religion up until relatively recently, up until the modern day. And so I guess my purpose of writing the book and the way that I see living a spirited life is living with equal awareness and mastery across the whole spectrum of who we are, the body, the mind, the emotions, the energy body, and this ineffable spirit aspect, which can be mastered. It can be, and it can, and once we do that, once we move into the world of our spirit and the spirit realm, which I hope we're going to get into today, we come to understand that that's actually the causal point of who we are, rather than a far outlying aspect that flashes and tinkles now and then and it can't be measured, and therefore it needs to be just sort of ignored. And I do think when we move into engaging with spiritual practice and an inquiry, there is a metamorphosis that happens with us where, we move from a sort of reacting to life, and a reactivity into a re responsive interface with life, which is what you call mindfulness, where you've done enough sort of meditation and inner inquiry and you're sort of observing stuff, you've got your secondary intelligence going, and you understand that there's a difference between your interface with life and your awareness. And that pause point allows you then to respond to life with a bit of discernment and choice. But then that's the beginning, I think. And that's at that point, that's when we start to actually heal physically too, because we're not reacting. We're not flooding our system full of stress hormone. We're not holding on to things and stories, and past hurts. And we're able to see them. We're able to heal them. We start to feel better, innately better, generally, mentally and physically. And I do think, and this, of course, I'm writing from my point of view, but it's also what I observe in my communities and with my clients too over the years, is that there's this evolution. It's not linear, of course, but where we start to move into what I call expansive living. And this is where we really start to understand the interconnectivity between us and others, and also that mirroring that happens between our inner inquiry and what actually happens out there in our lives. So as within, so without. So we start to really see that. And then further on to that, from expansive living, you know, there comes sort of like a creative living aspect. Because when we understand that we are the creative principle of our lives and we're designed like that, to be operating that way, then we start to consciously create the lives that we want. And this is where purpose and dharma and altruism and impact start to become important to us on our journey. So I also think that living a spirited life is where we not only do we live through with a mastery, if you like, and an understanding of all of these aspects of our consciousness, but we also start to operate with the senses that enable this move from reactive to responsive to expansive to creative. So the psychic senses, the intuition, as you and I know, that what comes from that as well is contact with the spirit realm and an understanding of total reframe on life and death, an ability to check out of the relentless race because we know that it's not a race, you know. So
Yes.
there's senses that pick up again in the yogic philosophy, they're called the siddhis, and they naturally boot up when we start to lean our awareness and operate from a spiritual center rather than a mundane material center.
Yes. I find I'm like addicted to meditation. And it's weird because years ago, this is a, I don't know if this is like 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I was just craving meditation. I didn't understand what mindfulness meditation was, but then somebody I met in a meetup group was like, oh, her name was Dickie Lee. So she was a Buddhist nun and she was holding mindfulness meditations every Thursday. It was in the next city and I fell in love with it. I was there, I think, a year or two in her class. And then after I went and trained to do mindful meditation, but I loved it because, like, here in Canada, it's cold. So when it was the summer, not the winter, we would go into the backyard, the garden of the church that she was using, like the space. And it'd be like the mindfulness of just walking. She's like, what does the grass feel like underneath your feet? And
Nice.
then it'd be like, now I want you guys to listen to the sounds. Just, it was like
Beautiful.
an hour of bliss. I was like in heaven. And after that, I'm like a big seller on like, you gotta do mindful meditation. It changes your life. At least it did for
Changes your life.
me.
And it heals your body as well. And we've got a lot of great research around this now, which of course I love. You know, where science and spirit meet, I quite like that sort of synergy. But we know that our brain physically restructures quite readily when we regularly meditate. We know that the nervous system regulates, it improves our immune function, it lessens our triggery anger responses. You know, regular meditators are just more well, and it affects
Yes.
our cognitive function so we can think about things in a better way. We can create, we can problem solve in more creative ways. Like, and as you would have read in the book, like I think given even at the outset, the body's positive response to regular meditation is telling us something, right? That we're designed to do it, and it's a very, very beautiful practice. But I like to broaden the definition of meditation too. So, because I
Yes.
think a lot of people think that it is like sitting in a cave with your hands in a
I
mudra.
can't do that.
No. There's horses for courses, but I think meditation just generally is coming into present awareness and paying
Yes.
attention. It's pretty simple, you know. But as with anything, like spirituality, meditation's become very competitive now. It's a massive industry, and so I always laugh when I see these things. Like I do breath work, I don't meditate. You go, it's the same thing. Like
Yeah.
still working with your innate system's energy circuitry to bring your mind into presence and to pay attention. And when you do that, everything else looks after itself. But you do need to do it regularly. Like I'm quite big on that. And you would have learned that as
Yes.
well. That's why you kept going back to the Buddhist center, you know, because
Yeah.
you start to feel the innate benefit of it when you do it regularly. It's like training your system, it's like getting fit.
It is. And if I don't do it for a couple of days, I feel very cranky. I feel off. And I'm like, I need to meditate, need an hour of quiet. Or just my favorite was always the walking meditations,
Yeah, beautiful.
right? Because you get to be present, but you're still moving. So you're still being active. But it's like, I don't know. It was always my favorite. Or going for like where I live, there's a lot of woods around here. So
Gorgeous, yeah.
just, and waterfalls. So it's just nice to go and be quiet and just go for a walk and just be present with nature. So the walking meditations were always my favorite.
Yeah, love it. Thich Nhat Hanh was huge on that. Was mindfulness is every step or something was one of his books. But when we're in present awareness, our sensory intelligence becomes more amplified. And so I love meditating outside for that reason as well.
Yes.
So the bird call, the scent, the light and the changes, the engagement with the season, like all of this becomes a really yummy symphony and a feast for your senses, which again is very good for you. It grounds you. And
Yes.
all of that beauty is there and available all the time, isn't it? But we're so sort of freaked out and racing and thinking in our minds, projecting what we've got to do, or we're looping over the past and we miss it. We miss the beauty in life. And I think that's one of the biggest gifts of meditation. And I agree with you. Outside is it?
Yes.
Meditating in Singapore is divine. It has to be early though, because it's so hot. So I'm always there. And the dawns here are beautiful, you know, because it refracts through that lovely equatorial air. And early in the morning, it's so gorgeous here. You know, there's like mango blossom and jasmine, and it's quite heady and blissful just to be outside and to meditate on the
Oh my
equator.
goodness.
Yeah,
That
beautiful.
sounds beautiful. In your book, you talk about feeling spirit when you were a young child, like 5, 6 years old. So take us back there. What was that like?
Well, I grew up in a really religious Catholic family of origin, and I loved it. So, which sounds strange from someone who now teaches the esoteric arts and speaks to dead people and all that sort of thing. And I teach meditation and different energy techniques through different frameworks that are non-Christian as well. But I really loved growing up with the ritual, the song. The sacraments, the community, the regular practice, the ideas of choirs of angels, and also the example of saints as well, and the metamorphosis that the saints sort of personify within the stories of the saints. Obviously, healing was huge. I mean, you
Yes.
could say Jesus Christ is one of the world's most known hands-on healers, you know, which I
Yes.
find funny that Reiki's not approved of by the church, but we can get into that in another podcast. But I think I was open to those ideas really, really early. Devotional prayer as well. My mum was really big on the rosary. I still love the rosary. I love the Japamala. You know, I love that repetitive sort of devotional prayer and how it turns your mind into this beautiful sort of soft, receptive state. So I was minded that way very, very early. And also I grew up in one of the most beautiful areas in Sydney in Australia, where we were surrounded by national park and nature. And I
Oh,
lived by the
wow.
sea. And so I had that connection with nature as well. And my mum is very connected with nature. She's an artist, she's a painter, and she would always point out to the kids in the family and me, like, look at the colour, look at that first azalea blooming. She'd point out nature a lot, look at the moon rising. And so that was part of my upbringing as well. And I think because of that, I could feel resonances and beauty and harmony in nature because I was open to it through my upbringing.
Yes.
But interestingly as well, my family are also, we're all really highly educated. I've got several degrees. You know, all of my siblings are very successful in business. And so I also grew up with a very interrogative mind.
Yes.
And it got to a point where I was asking questions that weren't being adequately answered through my faith of origin. And that's when I started really exploring.
Oh,
So
wow.
Yeah, so it was sort of a weird combination of things in my girlhood, which led me to here now, basically.
So when did you know you were a medium and you were going to do it professionally?
Well, really recently. So I know you've spoken with Christine Morgan, who's been my
Yes.
teacher for about 3 years. And I really like in my explorations, my own personal sort of discovery, I really had a leaning towards indigenous shamanic practices and plant ceremony and so on. I loved it in my adult life. And I always made a point of traveling to find lineage shamans, you know, rather than just doing a shamanic retreat in Bali or something. Like I've been to Peru, I've been to Utah, I travel around, I've been to Ireland, and I find people who've grown up in that tradition to teach me. And within the shamanic framework is a real acceptance of ancestral wisdom and our ancestors being a living field. And so I was sort of engaging in people in the spirit realm, but from, I think, almost like a shamanic concept.
Yes.
But I was still sensing their presence, but it was nothing like evidential psychic mediumship like we do. But what I found probably, so I think that was contact, but I just didn't know, I didn't have a frame of reference on it. And there was guidance and information coming through for me, for clients. But it was really about 4 years ago, I suppose, that I started noticing in my Reiki sessions and in my Reiki set, so I'm an Usui Reiki master like you, and but in my Reiki sessions, and you might have this as well, because of the Reiki and the resonance of the Reiki really affects your mind as the practitioner, I was doing psychic reads along with the healing work. And
Yes.
so my sessions would it'd be the here a little bit of a chat. What's why you come? What are you bringing into the rooms? We do the Reiki, and then afterwards we do a coaching session, and I would tell them what I'm picking up. And so I've been doing that for many years, and quite sort of comfortable, I guess, and confident within this my psychic capacity. But about probably 4 years ago, in the sessions, a different kind of information started coming across my mind, and it felt different. It had a different energy to it and to the psychic information. So the way that I would describe it is psychic information felt a little bit like I was reading the book of the person. I was reading that, which is basically what you're doing. You're reading their auric field and all the lovely patterned information that's held within that. But
Yes.
this new information that was coming through felt alive. And when I relayed it after the session, so it wasn't a live contact, which is what I'm doing now, but I'd relay it after the session. And I started to notice more and more that people would say, "That's what my grandmother used to say to me," or "That's what my dad gave me." And I was only looking at that photograph. And so it became very clear that the information was directly related to past loved ones. And once I clicked onto that, I thought, well, I need a teacher. It's happening anyway, and I don't have a clue what I'm doing. And I want to be able to do it because the information was so pertinent and so healing. And so I went on a search for a really good seasoned medium. And serendipitously, I think it was the spirit realm guiding me. I just walked straight away. Someone mentioned Christine Morgan to me, and I sent her an email and said, "This is happening. Can you teach me?" And we had a Zoom call, and she was obviously psychically reading me, and she was getting me to do a psychic read on a number of things, which was very, very clear and fine. And she said, "Now move into the power." And I'd never heard of that term before. It's like, I don't know, what's the power? And she said, "Well, this is where you sort of open up your senses and you connect with the spirit realm, universal soul." I can't remember how she said it, but she said it
Yes.
in a way where I kind of got it. And
Yeah.
so we sat and I meditated for a little bit, and all I got was the name Mary. That was it. And I
Yeah.
said, "I've just got the name Mary, that's all." And she said, "Oh, a very good friend of the family's Mary passed yesterday."
Oh,
So
wow.
And so she said, and I said, okay. I said, well, that's good, but it's not very useful, is it? And I said, I want to be able to do this so it's useful for people. And she said, you need to join a development group. And I really didn't want to. I wanted her to choose me, but obviously she's so busy. Like she's traveling around, she's senior lecturer at AFC. I didn't realize then, like, how, entitled that request was. Anyway, so she put me in a development group. And so I switched on the Monday morning, and there are all these amazing seasoned working mediums, and that's where I met Kerry Alderico, and we've become very good friends now. And I messaged Christine. I said, "You've made a mistake." I said, "I'm so out of my league here." And she said, "No." She said, "Just stick with it." And that was 3 years ago. 2 years ago, I started offering mediumistic contact as an offering, one-on-one, and then I started, which I love. I love it. Like, I love connecting people. I love the evidence. I love the feeling of the presence coming very close. I love the recognition of the client that they know their mum's right there. It's just so fulfilling for me, and it's so intriguing as well. And then Christy, I had a go. I mean, you've been to AFC, haven't you? Are you do you go there?
Yes, I went there for a weekend all the way from
Amazing.
Canada. I was just like,
It's a
I'm gonna
long way.
go. Yes, my friends are like, you're crazy. It's 7 hour flight. You're going for 2 days. I'm like, yeah. And I got on my
And
plane and off I went.
it's so
Yes.
worth doing. I mean, I go every year now, but you know how they do, the lecturers do those spirit reads for you, where they call it, I don't know what they call it, a spirit read or a soul read, where they sort of read what your trajectory as a medium is. And
Oh, the spiritual assessments. I love those.
that's it, the spiritual assessments. I couldn't think of the name of it. And right from the get-go, I think it was Simone Key. She said, "You're going to be demonstrating." I said, "There is no way I am getting on a platform in front of a group of people and demonstrating. There's no way." Anyway, fast forward 3 years, and I'm now deming. So, I held a demonstration circle. I do a hold a new moon lodge every. It's a women's circle every month, and I'll get sometimes I do them, and sometimes I get guests in. But it's all around some kind of spiritual inquiry, and there's a bit of meditation, a bit of ritual. And so it's experiential. It's beautiful, and all these gorgeous women, local Singaporean women and expat women, they come every month. And we give it to charity. Which is good for me because it takes the pressure off. So I feel if someone's buying a ticket and they know it's going somewhere, if I crash and burn, it's okay.
It's okay, yes.
And I've never crashed and burned. And we had our maze circle on Thursday night, just a couple of nights ago. And I asked a beautiful trance speaker, trance medium Hitomi Sano. She's a Japanese medium. She's a gorgeous woman. She does Japanese week at the Arthur Finlay College. She's one of the translators. So she did a trance talk, which was super relevant to many, many women in the circle. And then I did a DEM, and we had about five contacts. Beautifully evidenced, lots of tears, lots of laughter. It was just gorgeous. So, Simone Keys was right. Like, I am deming, I am enjoying it. I still get mega nervous, but I don't doubt anymore. Like, I'm not going, oh, is it going to be good? Like, I know the spirit realm will come in, but I still am like hyper nervous. I don't know whether I'll ever not be nervous doing it, but I do. I'm okay in front of an audience. I do keynote talks. I do lots of corporate workshops. And I've got big communities of people. Obviously, I'm totally fine talking to people, but I think you're in the hands of the spirit realm, so you don't really have much control over it, do you? You just got to,
No.
okay, come on in. What do you want to say?
It's all about trust. I have one mentor say, because I'd be like, oh my goodness, but I'm only doing Dems on Zoom. I haven't done it with like live people yet. That's my goal for this year. But I would get so nervous. Me and my friend would be like, want to throw up or something. And then our mentor's like, no, that's spirit saying, heads up, I'm here. Those nerves you feel, that's the power building. And
The
then once
power
I heard
building.
that, I was like, oh, okay. And then I didn't get nervous anymore. I felt it, but it didn't freak me out like it used to.
It's not overwhelming. I had the same instruction Well, one of the lecturers in AFC, I can't remember who, but also when you speak to some of those lecturers, they still go through that too. Like,
Yes.
it really depends on how you're feeling, if you've been looking after yourself, like if you haven't got anything pulling at you in your own personal life. But that's what's getting the powers all about, isn't it? It's sort of getting you out of the way. But yeah, I do. I agree. I think the nerves are part of it now. So, and it's much better to call it the power building, I think, rather than giving it a label of like I'm freaking
Yeah, no, it was freaking out in the beginning. I was like, no, it's just the power build. It's just spirit saying, hi, we're here, we're ready when
Yeah,
you are.
come
And I
on,
was
up you
like,
come.
okay. And then has your mediumship changed? Or is it
Oh,
still the same? Because I noticed mine
definitely.
changed and I freaked out
Definitely.
for a little bit. Because I'd be in circle and I would have other mediums go, oh, I got your mom here. She's been here for 15 minutes. And then my mentor would be like, Maria, it's your turn. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I have nobody. Where did they go? And then as soon as I begin to speak, I'm like, I got mom, dad, but it's changed. So for a while, I kind of had that, oh, where did it go? How did it change?
Well, Christine teaches the course, I think, called Seasons of Mediumship, and her view is if you get too comfortable, the spirit realm will make it uncomfortable, so you keep evolving. I think for me, I really intentionally try and experiment with it. So my first focus, I think, for most of last year was around the power and like sitting in the power, thinking about the power, journaling about the power, reading about the power, and really getting coochie with the power, and trying to find ways where I could efficiently allow it to flow in and recognize it. And then this year, what I've been really intentionally working with is what I used to do when the power was building is, you know how sometimes you get like little touches in your mind and it's not a
Yes.
clear contact, but there's bits of evidence coming in. What I used to do is grab at them, right? And I hadn't sufficiently built the power. Like I felt like I was picking the fruit before it was ripe,
I
So
remember doing that.
yeah, what I'm doing now is just holding all that back. Recognizing that there's people in spirit gathering who've got something to say, and standing up either on the platform or into the session completely blank
Yeah.
and going on a complete blank slate after sitting in the power and then allowing it to come in, way better, way better.
Yes.
I'm not trying to make it fit. I'm getting much clearer on relationship now. I'm every now and then I'm getting a name, which I never did before, and I didn't want to try for that because I'd start getting a bit guessy. But I'm
Yes.
getting names, I'm getting numbers, I'm getting birthdays, I'm getting significant dates. And I think the trick for me is really not to try.
Yes. I don't get names. Extremely rare I get names, but I do remember in the beginning of my development, because I'd be sitting in the power and I would get the little things of spirit and I'd be so terrified they would not show up when it's my turn. So I would be like on Zoom with a book and a pen, and the teacher thinks everybody's sitting in the power. And here I am cheating. I'm like, oh, I just got a hit. Let me write this down. Let me write this down. Don't do that. If you guys are listening, don't do that.
Yeah, I used to do that as well. Yeah, but I think that's what's cool about the power, though. Like,
Yes.
it happens automatically if you get to that sort of tipping point of the power. And so that's the only thing you've really got to focus on, isn't it? And just trust the spirit realm. Like that's one thing that Tony Stockwell talks about a lot, which I absolutely love, is that your effort is honored by them. Like they want you to do well as a medium. So you've got the whole of the spirit realm backing you because it's only really through you that they can express themselves really clearly. And so I think that was another evolution that I experienced last year too, was I really had an identity shift around mediumship. Like before I used to even, when I introduced myself, I'd say, and I practice mediumship. But there was this sort of penny that dropped, last year, really, where I started to really understand that I am a medium. It's not something that I do, it's something that I am. And that was a game changer. That's when I really, I guess, assumed the identity of a medium, and therefore it seemed to open up more gates. So yes, yeah, so it's always evolving, and I hope it always evolves. That's what I love about it, is that you never really arrive, there's always more. And every contact you do, you learn more, I think, or I do.
I do. You learn so much. And then I find too within mediumship, because it's always changing, it's always evolving. And spirit for me, I used to do psychic fairs. Like last year, I was doing a psychic fair every single weekend and I loved it. Like I have friends who'd be like, oh, I'd never do that. I'd be like, oh my goodness, it's like New Year's. I walk in, the power is built, and I'm on a high for 8 hours. I'm doing readings back to back, boom, boom, boom. And I loved it. And then by last year, by November, I could just start feeling like spirits like, no. And then this year, it's weird. I'm kind of in the middle of where everything's changing, but I'm trusting. And I signed up for three psychic fairs. I did one, and now I'm like debating, like, do I even go to the other two? But the other 3 years, I was like weekend after weekend, and again, and now spirit's just kind of like, you're gonna chill. So there's that whole
And
trust
know
in
you're being guided. Yeah, you're being guided. I find psychic fairs, I don't do them because I find all of the rattling and all the seekers and all the traffic
Oh,
quite
I love
jarring
it.
to my senses. But I did do one for a private club at the beginning of this year, and they booked me in, and I went in there, I think five different sessions with five or six back to backs. And I did actually love it. And the way that I wasn't doing mediumistic contact, I had some tarot, or I did just sort of like auric reads and stuff. But I just approached it like a really great opportunity to fine-tune my craft. Because different people come in and you can feel the energy shift, and the different senses will switch on depending on the information that you're picking up. So I just viewed it as great drill practice. And also it was wonderful because I picked up a whole stack of new clients as well. But but the big psychic fairs where there's lots of people selling their crystals and selling their stuff, and there's loads of traffic and there's all these seekers, that it leaves me a bit like at the end of it.
I love it. When I go in and it's like half dead, I'm like, whoa, what's going on? I need the thousand. I don't need, but I used to enjoy the thousand people coming in and the hustle and the bustle of like the power. It reminded me of New Year's Eve. And it's interesting because I did my first psychic fair this year and I walked away and I was like, I don't have that feeling anymore that yay. It's like I did it. And I had, there's always, I find for me when I do the psychic fairs, there's always one or two readings because I do more mediumistic. I have my tarot cards that I love, but people choose, right? It's like, do you want to do tarot? Some people are terrified of mediumship. I don't know what they think I'm going to do. And they'll be like, no dead people. It's like, okay, we'll do the cards. It's all good. It's whatever makes you comfortable. But I noticed this year I did one and I walked away and I was like, I don't have that yay feeling. So
The
it's
hitch.
shifting, you know,
It's
the
shifting.
high.
I do. It's interesting that you mentioned the fear of mediumship, So a lot of what I think my mediumship is about is actually educational. So I write blogs about it. Whenever I do a DEM, there's always a little bit of a talk about how it works. And I find also living in Southeast Asia, they've got a very different view of mediumship in a lot of the Southeast Asian culture. And the dead should be left alone. There's a lot of superstition. We've got a whole month in August of the walking dead, where people leave offerings out to appease the spirits that are walking the earth. And there's a and it, these are very, very old customs. But I think what it does is it it can bring in a bit of fear around or a fearful idea that mediums meddle with the dead. And of course, in Western mediumship, that just doesn't even exist, that idea, does it? Like where they're all in the summer lands, they're all free, they're all healing, they're continuing to expand, and they're interwoven into our reality. It's not like they're out there somewhere or in some underworld. It's like an infused realities or dimensions. And so I like to present different paradigms around the afterlife and mediumship to help sort of ease that fear of death, really. I mean, that's what it is, the fear of death. And mediumship blows that out of the water.
Yes, because I find there is, like me being Portuguese, when I was in Portugal a few years ago, there was a local medium and I went to her for a reading, and there was a lot of tradition, there was a lot of food offerings. And then after we were talking about my reading, but because I asked her, I go, why do you have money? So there was like a money offering. She goes, do you need to pay the spirit world? And then she was telling me about the cemetery, the local cemetery. She's like, I always bring money. Don't you bring money, Maria? I'm like, why am I bringing money? She goes, you have to put it at the gate. You need to pay passage, or the spirit, what was it? The spirits will be attached to you. And I was just like, but I think my mind, because like I've been studying evidential mediumship. So my mind, because I'm hearing her and I'm like, okay, I hear a lot of fear over here. And then I'm breaking it down. I'm like, oh, is that Egyptian? Like, I'm trying to figure out where did that come from? Because I find it interesting.
I think if you go under the superstition and under the fear, the act of remembering our loved ones, and like I keep a little ancestral altar. I've got a big altar in my space, and there's a section of that which is for my ancestors. And I think those really older traditions of lighting a candle for them, remembering them, honoring them, I think there's a lot of beauty in that, because it's a recognition that they're still around. And but if you get into a paradigm of if I don't do that, I'll be attacked or have bad luck or something, then you've lost it, I reckon. So, I think if you can get under that, so those traditions are beautiful, I think, leaving grain and bread and, there's a lot of Celtic traditions that are like that as well, where you make offerings to the dead. And, but I think if you think you're doing some kind of a deal with the dead, then you've lost the true connection of love.
You just reminded me of, so in Portugal, where I'm from, and I'm assuming all the other villages do this. So I come from a tiny little a village by the ocean. So the tradition is on Sunday. So the way, like our little village, basically everybody's related to us. It's like 100 people, all the little houses, and then you got the land going around, and then there's a forest, and in the forest, that's where the graveyard is. So everybody Sunday morning, we all, like when I go back to Portugal, like on vacation, we have a little church, a chapel within our little village. So you go to the church, everybody goes to morning church, you go home, you have lunch, or you bring the neighbors over so everybody's eating together. And then the afternoons, every Sunday afternoon, the village will be empty and everybody will be at the graveyard because we will be washing the gravestones, putting out fresh flowers, and then it becomes a community because everybody's checking in. And if somebody has passed away, their loved one's going to be there. So you're going to help them prepare the grave, like getting fresh flowers. So it's actually really beautiful. I forgot all about that. So you just reminded me of that
Beautiful.
beautiful tradition.
Yeah, really, really beautiful. And I love that custom of like having a picnic in a cemetery. I know it sounds really dark, but you're sharing, your lineage, your legacy, you're honoring the people that went before you that brought you to bear. You're celebrating. I mean, and we know this. I mean, I'm sure you've picked it up too within your evidential sessions that the spirit realm love a party. Like very often they will tell us they know a party's being planned, they will be there. They know what streamers and the colours, and very often I'll get references from people in spirit about celebrations that have either just happened or are being planned. And I often sort of think like how tricky it might be for some people when they move into the spirit realm and they're just forgotten. You know, or they're remembered with a lot of pain. Whereas I think there is something lovely about the whole village going to the cemetery and having a party there and looking after each other and making it beautiful with flowers. And, I love that. There's very similar traditions here. There's a tradition in Singapore, it's Chinese origin, called Chiang Mai. I think I pronounced that right, where everyone goes to the cemetery and they clean the graves, they leave offerings, they burn the offerings as well. So this is something that I found so interesting, but also it's a massive industry where you go to the offering shop and you can buy, they're all paper, and the idea is that you burn them and the essence of them goes over to your loved ones in spirit. But you can buy like a paper Ferrari, paper Manolo Blahnik, paper jewelry, paper money, paper food. It's a huge industry. So you go and buy all this stuff that you think your loved one might need in the spirit realm, and you burn it during these festivals. It's the same as offerings, but from my understanding, there is a bit of superstition around it too. Like if you don't do that, then bad luck will fall on the family. So it's a bit onerous. Whereas your Portuguese version sounds divine. It's like
No, it's
a
beautiful.
village gathering.
It is the village gathering, and it's everybody supporting everybody. And then I think it's in November, All Saints Day, because that's a big deal. People will actually fly into Portugal. If they've moved out, they'll fly back in just for All Saints Day, because that's a big celebration of honoring those that are in the spirit world. So it's very
Absolutely.
beautiful. And I know too, some of the immigrants that have left, then they will pay people to go to the grave site to keep the graves clean every week, because it's ingrained in us. That's important. That needs to be, don't forget your loved ones there, so that they have fresh flowers every, it's also Mediterranean, right? So there's fresh flowers every day. Not like Canada where we got snow. That would be hard and very expensive, but there, that's the tradition. So
It's
it's a nice
beautiful.
community, because when I've gone, I will see people. My mom will be like, oh, look over here. This is your great great grandfather. And let's walk down this aisle, because the tombstones in Portugal have the pictures. So you see the pictures of
Oh,
everybody.
beautiful, beautiful. So you can actually see their faces. And that story share is gorgeous, isn't it? Like where you learn about their lives and because I think it really helps to bolster your sense of identity too, when you know all of the contributions that have led you to who you are. And this is what's beautiful about, just exploring your ancestors. And I think the culture that really smashes Halloween out of the park, though, is the Mexican culture, Días de los Muertos. I know I didn't say that right, but they really have it down, the beautiful sugar skulls and that, where they really beautify death as a transition. And they honestly believe their ancestors are coming to the party, and all the marigolds and the fiesta street parties and the beauty of it. I just, and the monarch butterfly thing, like the migration arrives from Northern America and all those monarch butterflies arrive in Mexico at that time, and they believe that's the ancestors returning. These sort of beautiful, what you're describing in your Portuguese heritage, it really is, there's refractions of it all around the world, and so I think it's human. It's a human thing. But we, I don't know, modern day, we're so freaked out about dying. We're so in this race, aren't we? Got to get done, and I think we lose some of that beauty of those traditions.
They are beautiful. As long as there's no fear, nobody's gonna get us. We're all
Awesome
good.
decision.
We are all good. I wanted to ask you, because in the book you talk about moving to Italy, and there's this quote, and you write, "I fell in love with the human story of art and food in all its forms, and I felt the spirit within it all." I thought that was such a beautiful quote. So Can you take us there? Because like all my senses went off when I was reading that. I was like, I want to know
Yeah,
more
well,
about this.
your Mediterranean cells being told, well, there is nothing like the Mediterranean in my view. And I don't have Italian blood in me. I'm more Northern European and Celtic blood, Irish, British Isles. But I finished school and I wanted to travel straight away. And my dad, who knows me very well, knew that the second I set foot in Europe, I would not come back and go to university. So he said, get a degree. It doesn't matter what it is, just get a degree and then you can go and travel. And so the second my first degree, I did a commerce degree and I majored in finance and business law. So I've got that. And then I didn't even go to my graduation ceremony. I was on a plane straight to Italy. And I originally thought I'd saved up and I thought I'd go for 6 months and study the language. And I had studied French up to about year 10 at school, French and Latin. I went to a pretty classical sort of all girls school, run by the nuns, the Mercy Sisters. And I thought,
Nice.
I'll learn. Yeah, nice. I'll learn Italian, and then I'll come home and I'll start working. Anyway, 3 years later, I'm still in Italy. I'm
Wow.
about 13 kilos heavier because the mamas that were there
The
saying, "You need to
food.
mind, honey. You're too
Yes.
skinny. You're never going to fall in love. You're too skinny." So I was eating a ton of bread and pasta and just the best food in the world, earth to plate within hours. And I ended up doing an arts degree there, so I learned Italian. I did a degree. I majored in EU finance because I had a finance background and turn of the century Italian literature. The most
Wow.
useless degree in the world in terms of practicality. Great for cocktail party chats, but that's about it. But there is something about these modern cultures that are based in very, very, very old life. Loving and celebrating histories, and Italy is one of them,
Yeah.
and Portugal and Spain, and you've got all that beautiful Moorish influence as well, from the
Yeah.
Middle East coming through there, and obviously Sicily and southern Italy does as well, and Spain, Alhambra is a good example of that, but it just opened me up to, I guess a deeper sensing of the energy and the story within stuff, which is what us psychics would call psychometry.
Yes. Yeah.
Where you walk into a piazza that was built in like 1400 and something, and all of your senses switched on, and you can
Yeah.
almost hear the echo of the clip-clop of the horse hooves on stones, and you can. I think that's what was happening. I think when I lived in Italy, I started psychometrizing, if that's a word. Is that a
Yeah.
word?
I don't know, but it sounds good.
Yeah. That's
I was like,
why I travel. If there's a stone circle within a bull's roar, I'm in the middle of it because you can feel all the
yeah.
people, ritual that have been there before. If you walk into an old temple, you can
Yeah.
feel all the prayer. Spaces hold psychic energy, and if it's a
Yes.
really old space where millions of people have walked through there before, it's alive, and it makes you come alive. I guess that's what I meant when I wrote that paragraph. Yeah.
I love it. And then you write about moving to Northern London. And then you said you were there 3 years and you had this beautiful garden where you invited people to your garden. So, can you share with our listeners what did you do in the garden?
Oh, what goes on in the garden stays in the garden, Maria. No, well, I was actually lived in London for 10 years. So I moved
Wow.
there with a career move. And again, it was one of those things that was meant to be like a 2 year assignment to set up their human resource and comms function. I worked for an Australian listed company, it was a property and finance company. And they had a big project in just outside of London in Kent called Bluewater, big retail development. And off the back of that, they were starting to build a company, and they needed people to help them get the structure right within the company and the culture and the values and all of that sort of stuff. And I had just finished a big cultural re-engineering program in the financial services arm of this business in Australia. And that did very, very well. It won awards. And so from the back of that, I was asked to move to London. I was like, I'm there, you know, straight away. I don't think I even said yes. I said I was there. But I ended up staying and working for that company for 10 years. And I ended up working between London and New York and had a global responsibility over all of the communications. And I absolutely loved it. But I was getting a bit of a wobble on purpose. And while my spiritual explorations were happening in parallel to my career trajectory, so they were both going like this, I wasn't able to sustain them both. And so I decided to leave my career. I didn't know what I was going to do. And then there was a restructure right at the point that I was decided that I was going to leave my career and start to work out what my real purpose was. And I was given a redundancy. So that funded 2 and a bit years in London where I didn't have to work. And I really went into the esoteric scene in London, which is a deep and awesome scene. And I had bought a flat, which was the upper ground floor flat in a converted old Victorian, which would have been a beautiful grand old home in North
Wow.
London. And there was this insane couple, insane as in insanely fabulous couple, Rich and Kalinka, who lived in the lower ground floor. So they lived in the apartment under me. I was in the upper ground floor. And then we had two other spectacular tenants on the third and the fourth floor. But Richard and Kalinka, who remain my very good friends, they're living in France now. And they work in transformation and healing and do amazing things in the corporate world as well. That incredible couple. We co-owned the back garden.
Nice.
So our zoning of our apartments, we had half the garden each. And as soon as the second we met, we really liked each other and we decided we were just going to be fantastic friends, which has lasted, you know, over 30 years. And we decided that we wouldn't fence the garden, that we'd keep it one big garden and we would freely use it. And that garden became the scene of the most incredible experiences, expansion in my understanding. We used to share books. We used to sit out there in summer and we'd read books and not even talk, you know. We'd have drumming circles. We'd have sanghas there. Sometimes we do a yoga class there. Sometimes it started raining. Kalinka and I'd get out there and strip off and dance. Like, it was just like, it was so fun
Fun.
and free. You know, it was a free, unabated spiritual exploration through friendship and fun. And that really taught me what it's about to live a spirited life. And that was the beginning really of of the trajectory which I'm now on. And yeah, so the garden in London. I wrote a song about the garden. Yeah.
Beginning, the intro, your music producer.
So I'm a music producer. So I work with a very, very talented musician called Sam Jewell. He's based in Australia. And he and I also work with a fantastic post editor called Jason DeWild. They're my sort of music team. And so every month I send Sam a brief of the meditation tracks or the instrumentals that I would like created. And it's an interesting brief because it's kind of like, I want the heart to feel like it's expanding at this point, and then I want it to feel like this. And so, but he gets me, right? So he goes, yep, I know what to
Perfect.
do. He's great.
Perfect.
But so we've been working together for years.
So,
He will then send me the tracks. I will
yes.
then, if they're guided meditations, I will then take the tracks into the studio and record my voice over the tracks. And then they go to Jason for him to marry it all together. And then I use those tracks for different things. So I've got a really beautiful portfolio with a big following on Insight Timer app. And there are all sorts of different meditations there, and I'm releasing them. And then I also create bespoke guided meditations and ritual tracks for my courses and my course communities, which aren't released to the public, but they're part of a process that we go through, and it's just to support them in their shamanic journey, if that's what we're doing, or their feeling of connection with spirit. Or I do a lot of breath work tracks, so that's the music side of things. But I also play guitar, not very well, and I fiddle around, and I like writing songs and poetry and stuff too, but none of that's published. That's me in the shower with my shampoo bottle.
I love it. I love it. In the book, you also talk about doing all these trips where you're going to different places around the world, pilgrimages. Do you have a favorite trip that you've gone on that you want to share? Or are they all your favorite?
They're all my favorite, and they all completely recalibrate me in some way. And, we were talking about travel before, and it does that, doesn't it? It's like
Yes.
when you walk across different lands and through different cultures, you're really immersing yourself in energy grids. And a lot of my travel has woken up old memory in me. And I mean, it can't be proven, it can't be evidenced, but many times I found myself lost in the old quarter of a medieval town. And I know I've lived there before. I just know it. I know where the well is, I know where the cathedral is, I know the back alleys without a map. I just know it. And so I can't explain that, it can't be evidenced, but there's that. There's a waking up of old memory, I think, that happens when you travel. And I just think because we are all one thing, like we are the whole human race, the earth, nature, the cultural expressions, the songs, the food, it's all one beautiful symphony of spirit. And I think the more you go into it, the more you sharpen your senses to it, the more you love it. The more useful you become to the collective because you're immersing in the collective. So I can't pick a favorite, I have to say. But
That's okay.
the last 3 years, it's just been Arthur Findlay College.
Oh,
So,
wow. Have you ever
yeah.
thought of doing your own retreat? Like you pick a location somewhere in the world, and then we all sign up and follow you?
I think of it constantly. And I used to run retreats with a fantastic friend of mine. Her name's Anna Layard. This is pre-COVID. And we called them creative spirit retreats. And we used to take people to Java. And I absolutely love Java for a million different reasons. It's super geoactive. So the energy in the land itself, like there's volcanoes, like some puffing smoke all everywhere all the time. There's all these different sea currents around it. There's very, very old ruins, and it's got a very spiritual history. Old temples, it's divine. And but it's also interestingly got in this sort of new generation a really, really interesting burgeoning contemporary art scene. And Anna is a historian and art curator, and I'm the woo-woo end of the component. And so we used to take groups there, and we'd do immersion in the contemporary art of Java. And then go and meditate in the temples, and we'd organize like a local Javanese shaman to come and speak with us at dinners. And and so it was sort of spirit and art, and they were massively popular. The COVID really decimated Java, and politically it's changing a little bit as well. So we haven't gone back there for a few years, but I am cultivating, I'm cooking up a secret plan. So I've got some land in the Blue Mountains, and that's a very resonant, gorgeous nature immersed, infused space, and which is very, very meaningful spiritually for the First Nations people of Australia as well. And it was always a healing space. It was always where the First Nation Aboriginal people would go to heal. It was the summer hunting grounds. There's heaps of ironstone, so it attracts a lot of electricity. There's a lot of rivers. It's like a magnetic field. It's beautiful. And I've got a little bit of land there. And so my plan is that I would like to bring people there.
That sounds amazing. So I want to say thank you so much for spending this time with me. And again, your book, your life should be a movie. Again, the book is Spirited. A guide to your innate spiritual design to transform your life. If you don't have it, you definitely need to get it because you'll understand why I said this needs to be a movie. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh,
So,
such a
thank
good chat,
you.
Maria. Thank you so much for asking me on.
Oh, thank you. Okay, goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. You can go over to my Instagram at Maria Gonzalez Medium and let me know what you thought of today's episode. Would love to hear from you. Or join my free Facebook group. Link is on my website and join the conversation. Again, thank you so much for listening.